Armillaria melia. Knight Bulstrode hesitated before bleeding into the page. Groups of memories burst over him like stars. A roulette wheel spinning with the balls cast in, the yellow of a fry, and a black bikini bottom that stretched above the dim and wavering light of a hotel pool as she fell in. A rider cursed his son. "He must think you're a fucking candy ass. Slap him in the face, Billy. Billy, I want you to slap him in the face," running away like a scared little faggot. Pentole. But Knight's mood had brightened when he gazed a coin jutting against the sky and moon. Pat. Try. It felt like his mind had unwound, coming slowly apart as he scrolled through screens numbly, unable to think, his memory effaced. Yes. Tonight the words on the screen rippled, paranoia edged through him like a knife. "This guy is scaring me." He preens his words towards her body. "Listen." "Right, yeah." Pop. "What is happening to me? It's like I'm trapped beneath the waves. Cast your thoughts forwards and backwards. Draw for solace." "Right." The train in morning lilted above the outer boroughs. A sunny skyline of gas tanks and factory stacks and derricks and bridges. Crushed flat. The pressure crushed tight and cold as water in a trench. Easy. Condominiums filed the sky. Pale blue was fading to periwinkle, and a few sooty clouds drifted over the chimney pots. At Jamaica, the train slid to platform. Knight sorrowed. His pen twitched across the page, and spikes of hunger pushed into his legs. He felt enslaved by hesitancy and doubt. The pressure of a gaze flattened against his neck. "What is cracking me? Try to think over this problem objectively. Where are you, and where are you going?" "I am fallen petals in a flowing river, powerless to change course or resist." "That's no answer." A feeling runs current to this one. Groups of notes locked in the air and in his brain. Vibrating strings rang out ocean bed. Waves pulled off his fingers. He slid between the root notes, sliding waves, shifting water. Knight looked out the window at the flood on the sky. A crescent moon floated in the dark blue ink of astronomical twilight. "Squeeze legs there," preens his words to her body. "Listen to how they mold." "Right, right, well, I thought..." "What you thought." Knight no longer doubted himself or his passage through the world. Layers of skin were molting. The door between train cars slid open, and a large figure stood at his side. Knight's eyes glowed up at the conductor into cracked stone plates. "Relax," bellowed he. "We'll take care of it at Babylon." His lips curled open like a tube, showing a bed of even teeth. Then he trundled up the car, grumbling in answer to a rider's questions. As a stream of passengers flowed out, he stopped in front of the doorway. "Hey, fatty, get a job!" someone shouted on the platform. "Hey!" shrieked the conductor in recognition, the word an egg of malice. He chuckled darkly and lurched forward. "Tickets!" The train wobbled above towns and water. "I'm returning to Blue Point. It is Friday night and I am alone. I will spend the night in reflection and writing until I pass out on the floor. Then I will wake up angry and confused and sit at my desk again. Nothing works. I'm a clown and an imposter. An artist doomed to obscurity. Oh my god. Write a sentence, you fucking madman." The sun crawled into the grave of the horizon. The column of its light faded from the sky, and all colors slipped away. Knight gazed out the window at floating trees, a lake house gliding by, tides of cars. He wrote, "As she spoke, you glided to her lips. Your lips closed around her kiss. As you walked, you brushed the tips of her fingers, your thumb in slow circles around her knuckles." The morning's wound still glistened at night. It was a pain unlike any he had felt before. It hooked into his brain, digging and sowing their bleak, rotting thoughts. He looked at his foppish bow tie and the lapels of his suit. He peered into the sky, desperate to stir his emotions, and felt nothing but a low-cutting pain. He was destroying his time on Earth. All the money he made would be spent on train tickets and debt. The train sank into the tunnel. A gash in his soul festered. The Woolworth building peered at him beneath veins of stone. Each window showed a desk, and on each desk stood a computer about which somebody busied. The floors were as regular as cells in a body, and people drifted up the hallways like corpuscles. Knight looked down, passing cars glittered, and imagined the fall. His body would hang in the air like a comma. Then a rush of terror would blossom into euphoria, and, if there was time, a moment of peace. He turned. His feet tapped the door saddle. "This is a Chinese law firm. We all love to eat. You've got to have a piece." If they ate, he would have to eat. There was no going back. His feet tapped the saddle again, and he waited obediently for a slice. Waves of fire flickered over him. A voice whispered that his doom was near. His eyes watched crowds flowing upon the pavement. Buildings rose on every side. Is this my life? Is this how I spend my time on Earth? The sun was crashing down the sky. Soon night would rise on a deep blue world. For a moment, the train ran parallel with cars on the road. Then the rubies of headlamps tattered as trees came between the cars and train. A blue star cracked open in the sky. Insensate but for the pressure in his head, he strove to move his wrist. The mycelium of blue. Drifting. Feeling slightly woozy today. It must be the stars of 4 in the morning contain a potion for drifting, for I'm shot out of it, like I'm melting. The slippery road, the lost sky, lost somewhere beneath my eyelids in sleep, come out regularly in day, except my look cannot pin them, they float. City of the night, plain in day, no longer bewitched with hopes and dreams. I gave my hopes up long ago, to the changing ardors of day. Unhinge from my mind the palace, where nets are slowly cast. Let the torrent of my mind flow over dark blue streams. Scuttling. At the bottom of the ocean, like a body of coral stuck to dark, sinking tides abrade wrecks and stars, engraving the order of a sea change. I woke up today, set about the lists and segments of hour to hour, aware that I'm inward drifting from rock to rock like claws on the seafloor. Guess I will look up today. Those few swords of light are today's event. Now I can recollect myself and return to the business of scuttling. I saw iridescent kelp once in a shallow rock pool. It was bent and thrashed by tide. It threw off coats of light. Buried. Buried again under my dreams. Falling, they dissolve. I'm always alone. So black an island life is. I'm stuck. I'm trapped. I'll never. Hope has walked out of my eyes now. They close on fields as empty as the sea. Is this what I wanted? A life of pointless toil? Young. Too young to think of dying, and yet early aware of its presence. All I do is set against the backdrop. Do I think my morbid worries alone? I know that time will sweep me down, way under the ocean. I can feel the drift and cut ties worsen, worsen, worsen. The mycelium of blue. What tide of discourse links these blues? I think that separation is a lie. That lies lie together apart, and that truth, like music, links everything. True or untrue, one blue repeated begets the entire flock of colors. From one color can I paint the entire world? Deep blue, black, midnight blue, answer to the call and tug of my heart, that as one of you leaves behind words, the other color answers with heart. For I know you shades will evolve into deeper, richer hues, and that the molts you leave behind are left for deeper blue. Dream Tree. It was seen after I fled the palace, on a narrow, empty suburban street. Its boughs were supple, thick, and striped with black like the sheep-white bark of a cypress tree. Nothing stirred in the canopy. No breeze shook the boughs but the leaves, white, green, nictitate. I saw in their fluttering crescents a hope that the sludge behind me would fade away, that peace could bloom out of my dodged nightmare, no pursuit from the palace ensuing. I stopped and woke in the core of the dream, to gaze a while at this godsent tree. Now where I go it stands for me, lines many avenues. Now I know night from dreams a road, and so I hope for you. Amber. I am coming unwound, uncoiled, undone, unsealed, unpetrified. It is all coming out, along cut up out like a release. All the past days and years and signs and people and faces I can't name or see, it's out. I know there's more. And the years of islands, teal, video games, summer soccer and rub of legs, summer days gone, years gone and pinned in screens, just words, just stop letting it, just stop letting it go. Reps, gross, erfska, opsi, arfli, virgul, where, eto, erfska, jeff, 40 kl, f, sorry, diefrio, esti, diefrio, also, kr, horoki, derg, erisko, hf, erp, derg, jeff, ross, rasker, what, jeffka, rick, zesk, 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 five, ezra, zorta, erte, erfri, sarah, duera, chirp, ser, twir, re, zet, test, otur, verse, 25, sem, you, five, rail, yeto, three, terf, gerasko, darati, treasure, veras, jeff, Yes, if you have to answer, oh, less, this is a jerk. Jerk, jerk, this is a call. He went to Twitter, off to this photo, notice, dark, kill, 348, kill, 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 sausage, kill. Wreck, 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 Def, factory, factory, Jessica, Fraska, the Jessica, the G, the G, F, B, F, C, F, G, 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 Kurskin, Fresh, Irva, Sarukin, Finish, Zerri, Sa, Irga, Hill, Sidfin, Winner, 4, 43, Krakro, Flaskin, 5, Sweater, I looked at Winners against Sarukin, Fleskin, Sweater, Finish, Lestman, Narrative, Elizabeth, F, F, Soli, Lestman, his map is dark, Unisary, Attention, J, Fafak, FSM, Elliot, his gates, GGSR, Jerese, yes, Jessamine, FK, HMWS, MZ, D. Go. Melting. The orange needle arced all the way to the right. A noxious smell of syrup seeped into the cabin of the Jeep. The roads burned. Stop. Emerald-footed gas in the needle crept down. Stop. Park crowds flew by. The needle rose again with liquid motion. The coolant light flashed 89 degrees Fahrenheit. Emerald's slender white fingers found the heater knob and twisted right. She flicked the loose away from her face. Hot syrup air blasted into the cabin. Nervous, Em's fingers dug in the cup holder. Grasp phone find button, slide across glass and blindly tap sequence. Tap, 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 tap. Her phone shook. Eyes burning upwards, Emerald sought the road. Three women in floral dresses glared as she rolled by their heels. Move! Emerald's thumb smacked the glass and the screen changed. Driving, she waited for the blank screen to dissipate. Syrupy odors wafted to Emerald's nose. She drew deep and exhaled, deep and exhaled. Sun glistened through the visor. Needle shoots up, engine lights flash, needle up, engine flashing, engine needle up flashing. Emerald swung the bulky Jeep through a split in the island. She gazed at the arrow creeping on white and green lines as a symbol of her motion. Her eyes flitted from screen to road, from road to screen. Emerald's eyes glanced leveled and remained upon Flatlands Avenue as it swept towards her. The road was gray, except for the dividing stripes, which were white, and she knew never to cross those. The smoke from her hood puffed and billowed, and fell in rows, drifting into the cabin as high fructose corn syrup. Yanking the Jeep to the curb, wads of smoke spewed out of the hood and drifted across the avenue. Phone Emerald's ear. Em? Hey, Dad. I'm having car troubles. The engine's overheating. Did you turn on the heat? It sounds crazy, but that actually cools down the car. Em? I did, but it still heats up. Where are you? East New York. What is that, Queens? A part of Brooklyn. Are you close to the highway? I'm not far. Try to get it over there. If you get to the highway, you shouldn't have any problems. It's when you have all those stops it starts having problems. Let me know if you need help and I can come get you. Okay. Alright, call me if you need help. Ford, Chevys, Ferraris glittered by on the road. The needle rose steadily. She slid behind a ring-dinging bus in the right lane. Emerald drew a deep breath. The air in her palate tasted like syrup, and she slowly let air fill her lungs. She inhaled all the way and exhaled slowly. Clenching and unclenching her jaw, she exhaled and inhaled, listening to the ringing bus. On the road. One dead engine behind the bus. Sheets of smoke rising from the hood. Cars beeping scornfully. Breathing in the air. Scree! Ripping the shifter to neutral. Keying in and out and twisting out and in. Boom. A piston dropped in the engine. Air and gas shot into the cylinder. The piston rose again, crushing all the mixture, and a spark kindled off the plug. A piston banged down an explosion, cranking power then rose, releasing air and gas from the chamber as the valve opened. Coolant circled the cylinders. On the metal it turned to steam and ultra-hot liquid that flowed through the hose once it shot out the gash as a spray of drops and smoke. Empty curb. Cut wheel. Stop key in ignition. Slam to park. Release brake and pull hood cover. Stopped. Emerald had come to stop in front of a row of apartments. A red and white awning hung in her passenger window. Glancing down, she tapped her phone aimlessly, scrolled nervously, and it flashed the time. She pocketed her phone, then twisted over the seat. A plank, pointed at one end, rested there. Emerald walked round to the front of the car. Agile fingers dove under the hood and released the stay. She lifted the hood with one hand and smoke drifted up. Blank propped open the hood as she gandered damage. Green smoke hissed out a gash in the radiator hose. Green droplets spattered the parts, the battery and its tangle of wires, the ribcage of the engine, the long yellow tube of washer fluid. What? She cracked open the owner's manual. If your engine overheats. Your cooling system may temporarily exceed normal range during severe operating conditions. Climbing a long hill, a long steep hill on a hot day, stopping after high-speed driving, idling for long periods. If the engine needle goes into the red zone, move the transmission to N, neutral, and turn the air conditioning off. I did that. Where is my coolant? The hose no longer steamed. She was typing gas station in. She slotted the key, turned her wrist, and the Jeep bashed air out of the louvres. She pulled from the curb, trying to focus on directions. The engine shuddered, died. Emerald pounded the hazard and braked and turned the key. The car shook off, then on. The sun was sinking beautiful, gray, hazy yellow. In 0.1 miles, the destination is on your right. The block slipped forward under Emerald's wheels. There, a blue gas station. She cruised, turned sharply, and her wheels bumped the curbstone as she turned between the lines of a parking spot. Yes! A man, holding his crotch assiduously, stood behind his truck in the spot next to Emerald's. She hopped from the Jeep with the plank jousting outwards and crossed to the hood in quick paces. Open lid. Sheet smoke. Green smoke. Emerald halted and twisted off the engine cap, but the plug stuck inside. She cursed foully, bitterly, meanly, and screwed the cap back on, hammering thrice with the side of her fist. It wouldn't budge. Emerald kept cool, tapped the rubbery crescent of lock, strode past crotch and went into the store. What marvels there were, combos, beef jerky, M&M's, Pringles, Twix, Hershey's, Reese's, blue, red, purple bags of Doritos, spicy peanuts. Emerald slid the peanuts from the rack and found coolant in a yellow gallon can on a rack near the bathroom. Hi, she said at the counter. Half-shut eyes peered in Emerald's face. Moist red eyes stared creepily, glazed, glass. A hand clawed the items and scanned. Emerald blinked. The register flashed a cobalt price. Here's a 20. Change flowed into Emerald's open palm. It was hot, 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 and traffic was thickening on the streets. A stone made way to the hood and placed the tank on the ground. She was seen engaging the Jeep's coolant tank and taking its counterpart off the ground. Later, she used one hand to steady the coolant and the other to apply it to the tank. Like orange juice, I saw green spilling into the tank, filling it. Then the stone wiped a nice thick bead of sweat from her sandy brow. Then, she reached in and twisted the engine cap. The plug stuck. She splashed a draught of coolant, pulled open the front door, jumped in, tore open the peanut pouch. That emerald sure could eat. She was ravenous. A snake, a toad, a leopard. Pinching smooth peanuts, they rose to her lips. Biting and tonguing the lobes, she licked, licked, licked fine powder, powder, from her lips, lighting her tongue acrid. Her teeth crushed the peanuts to smaller and smaller pieces. Emerald's green eyes twinkled and her moist mouth slammed shut, munching nuts. Elmer Fudd. Sucking her fingers with relish, she shifted the Jeep to neutral. One foot slammed the accelerator. The other foot braked. Jeepity emitted horrible whining snarl and the needle shot down the gauge. Emerald continued gunning, sun in her eyes, deadbeats everywhere. Mass society. She let off the gas and licked her lips happily. She called her dad. The car died. Again? Yes. Where are you? East New York. Do you know what's wrong with it? There's a gash in the radiator hose. See if you can find a hardware store. Get some duct tape and wrap it up, then just try to get to the parkway. Are you far? I was nearly there. All right, good luck. Call me if you need me to come get you. The sun was sinking into a gray sky. Emerald pocketed her phone and looked at the Jeep. She walked towards the intermission of Flatlands and Pennsylvania Avenue and, peering the cornrows, saw two gas stations, a red and a green. She stepped into the forecourt of the red station. The manager was chatting with a man in a tie-dye shirt. Excuse me, you sell duct tape? Duct tape? No. But the artisan up the street, Slowhood, have some. What is that? Asked Emerald. Just up a few blocks. You'll see it. Thanks. Jules walked up Pennsylvania Avenue in her gray beach shirt, tummy rumbling from beach food. She looked around hungrily. Little Caesars, cheese quilt, red sauce, White Castle burgers, tongue oil. A family of four gazed up at Emerald curiously. Popeyes, absolutely packed, never been. And Burger King, tall vegetables, grilled flavor. Oh, what a desert. I have spicy peanuts. Emerald crossed the street to AutoZone. She found a roll of black duct tape and, after paying, strode towards the door thoughtlessly. The cashier called her back, saying, "Hey, don't forget this." Emerald dizzied and Davis to the counter to retrieve her asteroid, left there shroomily, said, "Zao sheng gui zi, man diar," and tub-thumped back to the Jeep aquatically, footing rhythm. Emerald saw the Jeep as far back as the interregnum. It was odd. From 2001, deep maroon like apples and bore white pinstripes, Emerald approached the Jeep with a roll of tape in her hand. She opened the door, no time to lose, and seized the plank. She tucked it into her hairy armpit, no question about it, lifted the hood and set the plank. Sausage fingers were all sheared off a sticky patch of tape. Lightly gripping the hose seared her meat, but she lowered a patch to the gash and smoothed it quickly, smoothed firmly. She coiled tape around the rat hose thrice. Emerald turns the key in the ignition. Ah, the Jeep growled awake. Hee hee. She stared at the needle slowly rising. Oh, for Christ's sake. Signaled, slipped, slew onto Flatlands Avenue. Towers gliding in Jeep's mirrors. Burning consciousness, cars, highways, insects, rhythm. The needle is not the hero we need, but still, it rose in the gauge. All the way, love. All the way. Half a mile, turn right onto Fountain Avenue. To Adam, close to the parkway. Watch your language. Did you find tape? Yeah, I wrapped up the hose, but it's still overheating. Turn right. M drove past waste and sanitation buildings. Mafia body Wikipedia here. You'll be okay once you get to the parkway. All right, Dad. I drove up to CK7. Sold! I was hooked! It's the stops that overheat the engine. Drive slowly. First cylinder's banging, Emerald near the road. Okay. You might need to stop. Cool off, then start back up a few times. Call me if something happens. Okay. Merge now. Okay, Emerald merged left. Wait, are you stopping by tonight? That was my plan. All right. Be safe. Okay. Emerald coasted in the parkway, curving under lovely bridges. Nearing airplanes will dazzle you as they lower through velvet evening to the runway. Beautiful, you will murmur to yourself as wingtip vortices, white and swirling, rub the sky. Oh, the needle is rising to the extreme right edge of the gauge. Cars pulled aft the Jeep. Emerald led a thick cortege. Needle, syrup, hell. Oncoming headlamps, ooh, resembled, ooh, silky wet petals in a flowing, river. Smoke was welling in the Jeep. Oh, it was peeling off the hood, as Emerald eased off the gas and let the needle glide back a few millimeters. It was shooting, all the way down as the engine shuddered and died. Unable to restart the engine, she glided with her foot above the brake. When the shoulder opened, she turned right and came to a stop. Emerald cracked open the door. She stepped onto the shoulder, staring hatefully at the passing cars. The sun was sinking and the cloud banks reflected an orange light. Mosquitoes, the proboscis long and rose from the bushes and drifted on candy-ass wings towards Emerald's neck. Walk 300 feet to mile marker, copy digits, back to Jeep. Melting Pride 500 flew out of the Jeep's hood, drifting over the parkway. She wondered if other drivers could smell the burning cloud. Ruined world. Emerald stepped over the guardrail to protect herself from the cars, then sat on a ledge and called the police in a tow truck. She read King Lear waiting. Emerald watched the flow of cars. One by one, drivers turned their heads to gawk at the wreck of her Jeep. Useless old stinking wreck for poor stupid losers. Me. Anger bristled inside Emerald's heart. At the same time, the tow truck honked in the oncoming lane. Go to hell. Oh, Emerald. ha, 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 ha. A cop burned off the parkway, lights scrambling on the roof, as cars sighed past. The lights went out and the doors swung shut. Out stepped the officers, puffy men in blue uniforms, black belts and weapons. "How are you?" asked one. "Good." Above the sound wall came a cutting sound. An airplane, lower than Emerald had ever seen, flew above, its belly dull and gray. One by one, one by one by one by one, they all turned their necks. Blue Point. 1. All of the rifts in me, please come out for the night. It feels like I've been living the same night for years. I don't know how I will change my life. No matter what I do, the world slips away. All of my dreams are burning me. No matter where I go, I am bashing my head. Two. I have become a ghost to my friends and the people in my life. I feel like I've melted into the ground. I live in Blue Point. Blue is my favorite color. I name this my blue year. Everything is going very well for me. I'm healthy, though my mind sometimes turns blue. 3. I think this song has almost played itself out. Nights when the night leaves traces of me behind, I call blue. I can't seem to exhume this voice from my mind. It talks in shades of blue. With lobster claw fingers, I blew the words. At my wrist, at my window, is the night. 4. Whenever I feel blue, I think of the ocean. I like to think of the runoff. Sometimes I picture I'll make it to the ocean, but the ocean always seems to recede. I don't know why I think the things I think. I know I don't know my delusions. 5. This blue will ebb away in pieces. I trust the blue will drain away. The tide has brought new things too, like the hope this blue will fade. Into the ocean, which is 1 mile south of the Great South Bay. Ocean I don't. In wavelets pulsing to shore in the growling motor cars, above the horizon mixed with twilight, the reel chattering its teeth, line and hook submerged. Sea beams of airplanes, slicing fog. Good luck, my friend. You too. God bless. Trudging from the platform, through the pavilion, to the parking lot, his flip-flops smack the planks and he breathes heavily. The other lolls behind, smoking a cigarette. He is outlined by night, the ember of his cigarette orange. Behind, the waters mumble to the shoreline, blend with the dock. Amber waves in the water. Dogs bark. Cars park and leave. Footfalls shuffle in the parking lot. Like ghosts, a few sit in the pavilion. Then, the wheel cut, they peel and drive off through night, wheels groaning in the brakes' fireflies. The sky is hung with stars. The lights on aircraft blink. All flashes and flickers, lights that keep changing. Sighing road, bay, night. A speck of a helicopter floats through the night sky, between the bay and stars, alone in space with water below. The air tastes of flowers, water, starlight, smoke spiral, alone, blue. Midnight through my window. 1. I touch myself nervously. Today is another day of not accomplished my dreams and I am still the same person. I have not achieved fame, success, or join the ranks of gods. But I have tried to love myself more today than all other days on earth. There is nothing in me that will not fade. I will drift away from myself as the world changes, as my confidence blooms and shrinks, and as more nights pass under my eyes, and I grow up more happy, more sorrowful, because I know I cannot change. A cool night breeze drifts in, night's waves, which I sink and soak and change. Again, night's waves, in which I soak and cease and shift. I think I hear a song in me rising. I will wet my hands in the ocean of night and live as the waves, forever crashing and contradicting, blissfully alone, singing my song myself. 2. Meltwater trickles through the gutters. Snow has fallen for the first time this fall and has limned the branches with white dust. A violet sky. A splotch of light blooming around the cars. Slopes of snow spread evenly across the windshields. When a car comes, its beams light the snowy road to the houses. I stand here with my reflection in the world in the window. I hope to never lose this energy which courses through every moment. This surge will not subside or my life is at its end. I stand to you through a double or triple glass. I look through you in awe. Lonely, sad, dry, and cold moaning gust of winter pushes through autumn. I listen to the water droplets drip. I will never die. The Wake. The last periwinkle fades from the sky and Rose's life is at its end. All day her family members have come and gone. Up the stairs to stand by the flickering candles and wish her goodbye. Back down to the kitchen where they open the blinds to let light pour out of the house. Mist falls, and in the glow of the street lamps it looks as if the air is crying. Like amber shards the droplets waft, and, far down the street, compact a veil. Mosquitoes fly out of the trees. They alight on an arm and tap a capillary, drink and carry off blood. Into the night sky, lemon light splashes the gables. It falls on the cars aligned front to back in the driveway, and all of Rose's family have settled inside. They have taken their seats around the kitchen table and, murmuring lowly and solemnly, have formed a circle off to one side of the bed. Yellow the star caps of Narcissus burst, proffered to the night with a daylight intensity, the night air closing around the drooping crown and the parts it warms for bees. Cooling, the night rings with crickets and, sighing, a course of air peels off of Montauk Highway into the yards. The prayers of the lamps push but cannot hide the dark. In the bluest hour nearing, Rose will take her last breath and die. It was 7 when we arrived at the wake. The sun was beginning to sink into the cage of trees, and an apricot light slanted over the parking lot. My uncle and I walked at my grandmother's side as she hobbled forward on her cane. The awning of the funeral parlor displayed an emblem of a tree. "Hello, good evening," spoke the morticians as we stepped under the awning. We glided through their unurgent voices and, seeing our progress, one held open the door, saying, "My pleasure." The parlor smelled of flowers. 2 women wearing black skirts floated into the upper room. There were 2 mourners at the doorframe on our left. Their backs were to the wall, their blonde hair to their shoulders, and they peered at their phones with restrained smiles. I cast a look over my shoulder. My uncle and grandma were looking forward impassively. I strode off in the direction of the register. A gold tether connected a pen to the lectern, on top of which lay an open book. I scanned the book's column of names, then inked mine in the first open box. A murmur was flowing out of the rooms, at the front and back of the hall. "Why don't we go put our names in, Ma?" My uncle steered my grandma to the register, a hand on her shoulder. "Come up to write your names." I made way for them, and passed into the room of the dead. Inside, the murmur of voices was soothing and the lighting agreeable, dimmed to a color between peach and amber. About 50 mourners stood chatting, some in the back of the room, clustered between the groups of chairs, others in the open center space or squeezed into the narrow column between the chairs and wall. As I waited, I noticed, on my right, a group of men circled jocularly. Leaning backwards with their hands in their jacket pockets, they listened to one man, indented from the circle, speaking. I broke into the circle and, stuffing my hands in my pockets, arced my eyebrows high into my forehead. The speaker was Chinese. He had a stocky body and spoke hurriedly, articulating his speech with rapid hand movements. A film of sweat had broken over his face, which had reddened in a flush towards each of his cheeks. His brown-black eyes searched the eyes of his listeners, and it was as though the man was finally coming apart after a long period of silence. He was saying, "So I told her, I told Maria, honey, I've got to go to business. I will see you in 3 days from now." His eyes passed between the members of the group. "So you left?" said one man. "Just to come all the way here?" "Precisely! And I still have them trapped in my flat." He scratched his head. "They're calling me about, how do you say, the roaches. The window's locked and they can't get out. And all this time, I've got to go to airport." The men in the circle laughed. "What happened then?" "I don't know. They could be in there dead. I think Maria's really going to be mad at me. Anyway, I ordered the cab to bring me to TR, second terminal, of Shanghai Airport and get on the plane with absolutely nothing. No shirts or change of briefs, oh my God." The speaker laid his hand across his forehead, the entire time thinking, "Oh my God, I can't believe it. Rose is dead." "It is very sad," said one of the men. The conversation broke off and the man with the green tie looked to the coffin. It was a heavy black box with sheer sides, a white bar for kneeling, and the inside lined with pale blue cloth. I could see the face inside. The men shook their heads in resignation and I turned on my heel. My uncle and grandmother stood behind the leading group of chairs, surveying the room expressionlessly. I took a pace towards them on the gleaming tiles. "See anyone you know, Mom? Chris here?" "No," said my grandmother. Out of the corners of our eyes, we watched mourners spilling into the room. Wearing black or their business clothes, they came in tired from the sun and work. A gentle murmur now filled the room. To unstop the flow of mourners in the center of the room, we walked over to the picture whiteboards. Here my grandmother spotted one of her acquaintances. "Chris," said my grandmother. "Chris." Chris passed on deeper into the crowds at the back of the room. At my back, I heard someone saying, "I prepared them all yesterday. A million trips back and forth to CVS when we found new photos we wanted to have printed. Aren't they beautiful?" One showed Rose standing in the green and purple lavender fields of the North Fork, and the next, Rose cradled a small dog atop her bed in sunlight. I thought of the house 2 nights ago, silent in the dark save for the dreary yellow light spilling out of the windows. Yes, very beautiful. She lived a beautiful life, and surrounded by all of her children. On a table between the boards, an iPad moved pictures of Rose from left to right in fading boxes. The crowd in front of us had cleared away and we moved towards the coffin. A soft light illumined the platform on which it stood, and enormous bouquets stood like guards on either side. Rose's skin looked warm in the pinkish light. A silver dress clung to her body. Her eyelids were closed in slumber and her lips drawn as if they had just tasted something very sweet. I crossed the room to a chair in the front row. A line of mourners had formed before the coffin. One kneeled upon the bar at the coffin's base, her head bowed in prayer. When she stood and walked off, another came to fill her place. "A lot of people here tonight, aren't there, Ma?" "She must have had many friends." "Looks like we can go up now," sighed my uncle dutifully. I rose. "You coming up, Ma?" She nodded wanly, nodded yes. As the bar could only accommodate two, I waited for my grandmother and uncle to finish. They walked towards the coffin at my grandmother's pace. When they were before the bar, my uncle took from my grandmother her cane and placed it on the ground. Then their knees crumpled atop the bar's white crepe lining. They knelt forward, clasping their hands and moving their lips. The murmur in the room had grown to a low drone. My uncle stood off the bar and made a sign of the cross in front of his face. He picked up my grandmother's cane and, when she had risen, handed it back to her. A pang of heartache shot through me as I took the first steps. I feared what damage I might do if I prayed to a god that did not exist. Kneeling atop the bar, I tried to dispel my worry. If I let a wave of hope break over my prayer, I could not err. I closed my eyes and felt the calm, slow pulse in my heart knocking blood through my veins. For that which put Rose and my soul in motion, which brought her through the world to a natural end, which will bring my life and all lives to a close, present yourself in the warp of my prayer. Not your thoughts with mine, and say, was not in vain or chaos, patterned to lines of beauty and eternity. Why will you go, There are no mistakes. Knives of music cut open the room when I rose. I turned from the coffin and crossed the space to where my uncle and grandma stood. I smiled and we stepped to the middle of the room, then to the back. We waited at the fringe of a group for someone my uncle wished my grandma to greet, but no, she was embroiled in a conversation with the gentleman. Over the tops of shoulders I noticed a young man, around 20 or 22, dressed in black and his eyes buckled in sorrow. He greeted the mourners anemically, his arms resting on a side table. Though his brothers stood at ease around him, shaking hands and chatting with the guests, the young man's listless posture and the muscles of his face expressed naked understanding. He listened to the murmur of the crowd thickened. For a moment our eyes seared together, then broke off. A tide of mourners seethed between us. "Excuse me," I said to one of the businessmen in front of me. "Oh, sorry about that," he said, opening the channel. The mourners parted in front of us and we exited the room, then the funeral parlor. We crossed the parking lot slowly. We each held one of her arms as she staggered forward on her cane. "You know me, a slowpoke," she said. When she was in the car, my uncle shut the door. For a moment I saw my grandmother's face behind the glass, looking into the square of the headrest. Through the last glow of evening, I searched for my uncle's eye in the moment that he pulled open the door, but he did not see me. We were on the road a few moments later. I watched the cars passing. A sharp pain bored into my chest, and it felt like I was melting again. A red glow was welling up in the cabin. The stoplight turned to amber. I looked up into the red lantern of the setting sun. That was my third wake. The end.